Thank you for listening to Overleveraged, where we explore the big macro themes affecting investors, economic imbalances, giant geopolitical trends, tail risks and tremors, and everywhere risks are not being fully priced into markets. Remember, trading carries risk, and all opinions are provided as general market commentary only. Please do your own research. Our risk warning will follow at the end. There's no earthly way of knowing which direction they are going. There's no knowing where they're rowing or which way the river's flowing. Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. For the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing. So that was a rather creepy Gene Wilder in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Well, that's me trying to do Gene Wilder in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
In a slightly creepy way.
No? Yeah, slightly creepy. So sorry, I've already creeped Helen out completely. welcome as ever to Overleveraged. And I have Helen Thomas from Law Money.
Hello.
Good to have you back. And for our Easter special.
Where are the Easter eggs?
Maybe tomorrow. They'll arrive tomorrow.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, so we're talking because it's Easter, mm-hmm. And because everyone loves chocolate.
Yeah,
it's worth talking about chocolate because cocoa prices have been going bananas
through the roof.
More expensive.
More expensive than copper.
Yeah,
certainly at the time of us speaking.
Yeah, they've just gone up to $9,000 a ton, which is more expensive than copper.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, well, it does taste better than copper.
Yeah, candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker.
Right, okay. You got them all.
Chuck in some of these Charlie and the Chocolate Factory things.
You got them all.
Do you love Roald Dahl?
I love Roald Dahl. Yeah. Who doesn't love Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and that film? I know there's been other films.
Well,
but,
it's the original.
You know, the original's the best.
Although I do think that his grandparents are basically benefit scroungers and should be... Cast out and hauled up before the beak.
I hadn't even thought about the political dimension.
I mean, he just gets up and walks, you know.
Oh, yeah, that is true. I know.
Honestly, lazy. anyway, back to cocoa.
I think I'm an Oompa Loompa, actually. I don't know. People can't maybe tell
Very
this.
Unfair.
People might not be able to tell this because we're sitting down and I don't know how many people are watching on the YouTube, but yeah, Neil is a good foot taller than me. But that's not difficult because I am... I'm not even 5 foot tall. So if I'm Oompa Loompa, who are you?
I'm probably Grandpa Joseph.
Oh, there you go. Yeah,
no,
yeah,
I'm definitely Willy Wonka. Got to be Willy Wonka.
Oh, yeah, come on. Yes, lead us on a merry dance.
Okay. Well, on the merry dance of cocoa. So the reasons behind this surge in chocolate prices is partly sugar, which is also up, but mainly because the cocoa prices have gone through the roof, as we said. The crop from Ghana is Ghana and Ivory Coast, basically. Mm,
they're the
two
ones.
Main producing countries. The crop from Ghana is down about 50% over the last few months. That's a 22-year low. Ivory Coast also down, are going to be down 33%, they expect. The International Cocoa Organization expects global cocoa production to fall by about 11% this season. Grindings, which is a measure of demand, is falling about 5%. So there's a lot, you know, there's a lot happening in terms of cocoa. But the main thing, really, why we want to look at it is the reasons behind it. So it seems to be that climate change mm-hmm. and El Nino weather phenomena are...
Yeah, the harvests... There's been several poor harvests.
Poor harvests, right? Basically. So last year there was heavy rain, which accelerates the spread of black pod disease. That causes the cocoa pods to turn black and rot. And there's cocoa swollen shoot virus in the Ivory Coast.
Yeah.
And it's dry. And it's, so they've had a lot of rain and now it's dry and hot. Yeah. So it's all messing
it's kind
up
of
the
like
harvest.
All,
yeah. And everyone's saying, well, it's climate change.
Yeah. There's no doubt the weather and the disease elements have been, driven the lower yield. But then you get into some of the more of the mechanics about it, and there's a whole regulatory pricing process that's supposed to somehow even out these imbalances, but that has gone kaput as well.
Yeah. So they're not benefiting from higher prices as well. The producers are not benefiting from higher prices. Not been the investment in new trees, so they've not really planted new trees for a long time in many places. I think EU rules. Of course.
Okay. How could we not talk about EU
rules? It makes it harder to plant. It makes it harder to capitalise because there's deforestation rules.
The deforestation rules, yes.
You know, sourcing rules and making sure that there's, you know, there's not a supply chain sort of stuff that all these big companies have to attend to.
Yeah.
Has not enabled necessarily the sort of market to function maybe as well as it could.
Yeah.
And we've also had, so they've been running out of beans, the processors. The state-controlled Ivorian bean processor, Transco, which stopped buying beans because of the price. It's processing from stock, but it's not clear how much capacity it's got. So that's all feeding into this, prices keep going up
exactly.
As well.
This is
because
the point.
There's a sense that they're running out.
This is the point, is it's starting to go exponential. Well, it has gone exponential, as we've said, with the price of cocoa. But looking forwards, it's tricky to know what's going to reverse that, because as you just pointed out, you get the beans and then you have to process them before they can go off to the chocolate manufacturers, broadly speaking. So there's a number of steps in these supply chains. And now the production plants in the middle are idle because they can't afford to buy the beans.
Yeah.
So there's not even, you know, there's low supply and the production of it has disappeared right now as well. So the supply is continuing to shrink.
It's a genuine shortage.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's normally a, you know, regulated market, and traders and processors are purchasing beans from local dealers up to a year in advance at pre-agreed prices. Local regulators then set lower farm gate prices that farmers can charge for beans, but when you get a shortage, it all breaks down. Dealers are paying a premium to farmers to secure the beans. The dealers then sell the beans on the spot market at these higher prices instead of delivering them at the pre-agreed prices. So the whole system breaks down, and you end up with this sort of price.
And then you get a massive squeeze. And as you say, that's just going to motivate the end demand. You know, the Nestlés and Hershey's of this world to satisfy what they needed anyway. Of course, you're going to be incentivized to deliver that. So if you know, what's the point of waiting for a pre-agreed price if you're running out? You might as well sell it spot now.
Yeah.
Get the high price.
And you know, that will feed into higher chocolate bar prices, higher maybe more fruit and nut. I read somewhere that they're, you know, maybe going to
remove the chocolate content.
Yes, you actually put a bit more fruit and nut into
that is. Can I just say that's probably the most shocking thing I've ever heard.
Do you love fruit and nut though? Cadbury's fruit and nut.
Best. No, Neil. No, if you put fruit and nut. I'm very adamant about this, and have been from a very early age as a chocolate aficionado. You put fruit and nut in chocolate bar, it isn't chocolate anymore.
It's a synthesis of all that's good.
Are you telling me that if someone gave you a chocolate chip cookie, or it were a raisin cookie...
I like both.
I mean, they're just not even the same product. Anyway, but that's actually very interesting, because we've gone through this. Everyone's now very aware over these last few years of shrinkflation. It's sort of a bit the same idea, isn't it?
Yeah. A Mars bar just doesn't cut it anymore. I mean, it's not enough. A normal size
Mars bar is tiny.
It's like the old snack size, the fun size.
Oh, yeah. You have to have two.
Yeah.
I mean, what you just do, it's a given. So you're telling me that is going to carry on potentially, or they'll.
Well, there seems to be a deepening shortage.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's hitting margins at some of these companies. So if we bring it back, maybe. I mean, you can trade cocoa futures if you're minded to. It's quite not necessarily.
Very liquid.
A game for you. Well, no, not very liquid.
I wouldn't mind taking delivery of some cocoa beans, but I'm not sure how I'd store them.
Yeah, it's a storage.
Although it's actually very difficult to get the cocoa beans to become chocolate. Hence why you've got this situation of stages in the supply chain.
That can break down and then that manifests itself in higher prices. But going back to the causes, because I think this is where, you know, we're trying to talk about in this podcast is what people are missing out on, maybe. Because some of what we talked about there is kind of, you know, fairly well understood. We can see a clear correlation between what's going on the price. There's a report from the Energy and Climate Intelligence Unit. So I guess the name of that unit tells you how they're minded to think. This new report sets out how a combination of El Nino, which is the wet sea weather phenomenon, which happens every sort of 3 to 5 years, combined with climate change, is driving up cocoa prices. And they point out, for example, that climate change made the heat wave in West Africa 10 times more likely. And it's that
their analysis? That's quite
Yeah,
that's specific.
It is, yeah. And so they note that the December last year, both countries. So again, we're talking about Ivory Coast and Ghana as the main producers of cocoa. Heavy rain last December decimated cocoa yields. It caused plants to rot with black pod disease. Precipitation in West Africa was more than double the 30-year average for that time of year. These wet conditions swiftly followed by droughts, typical of El Nino in February, and this decimated yields again. So they went from having far too much water to not enough, as they say. And they note that nearly all cocoa is grown in regions which are vulnerable to climate impacts. So, and I actually spoke to a climate, a net zero specialist, investment specialist, who happens to be my sister. I tried to get her on, but she's not so keen. And I've got her, what she and others are worried about is this idea of 4 days from anarchy, which is something that MI5 mentioned a few years back. And they maybe comes from Lenin, 3 days, any civilization is only 3 days from a revolution, three meals from a revolution.
That's right, yeah.
Is it four meals from anarchy? Maybe it's four meals, four chocolate eggs, anyway, whatever.
You part me from the Mars bars, I'm anarchy right
there.
If
I miss my lunch,
it's over.
So she says that extreme weather is more likely and more severe because of climate change. The physical effects of climate change and impact on the financial system is underestimated. There's a big issue in the use of climate change modelling in the financial world, because it doesn't capture the complexity of what's happening, particularly the idea of tipping points and cascade effects. So it's
not
one
linear.
Small thing is non-linear.
Goes.
She says they're grossly underestimating the risks. Climate change is the biggest systemic risk to economies and society. There's actually a paper from the Institute of Actuaries, the Emperor's New Climate Scenarios. That's where that is from. Well, the key point that she makes is that it doesn't take much imagination to envisage a series of weather-related events which we know will be more frequent and more severe in some of the global breadbasket regions. To then see major geopolitical reaction, and that cascades through financial markets. So it's not, cocoa, we can probably live, cocoa's non-staple fundamentally. But if you see these sort of weather events happening in where wheat is produced, that could have a much, much bigger impact on the global financial system.
So this is almost a warning sign of what's happening in cocoa.
What could happen? It could happen with
wheat, which would have huge ramifications for everybody and for populations, and particularly then, as you say, once people start to miss out on the staples or can't afford those, you really are headed to
four meals. Yeah,
interesting because, of course, and she's touched on a key point there, which is so how do you even model for that? Mm-hmm. And of course, financial markets love anything quantifiable. So I was interested to hear you say it was the Institute of Actuaries. Produced a report because, famously, actuaries are all about
long-term modelling,
assumptions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I will take away from our chat today, Neil, to go and have a look at that because I'd be interested to see what
the Emperor's New Climate Scenarios.
It
was published last year. Okay. Quite interesting.
Yeah, and I think that, systemic risks are always a struggle, as we know, for financial markets. They can't really price them very well. And this in particular, it's nonlinear, it's exponential, it's finding that little thing, that little, right now you mentioned that cocoa processing company in the Ivory Coast. Mm-hmm. It'll be something like that. It could be one factory or one farmland that's integral to the wheat supply chain.
Well, we saw it in Ukraine.
Oh, exactly. I was thinking that.
There was a big concern about the grain. Exports to places like Egypt, and I think actually the Arab Spring was that not the whole Arab Spring was to do with food prices.
That's right, exactly.
2011 or whatever it was. So there is we've got evidence for it.
Yeah, there's a precedent. Yeah, exactly. It does happen.
And the French Revolution was bread prices.
Yep. So the one thing about this sort of thing, I talk about the quantifiable element, but I think this is where you do have to think about history. If you work in finance, because it's all there. We've just given a few examples. There'll be far more than that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you could run all the models in the world, but as the pandemic showed us, let's say somebody decides to look at, wheat prices versus the VIX or something.
Oh,
But the VIX hasn't been around that long. I mean, it's been a long time. Okay. It feels in modern finance, you know, that it has.
A day looking at it, it feels
like
a long time.
It's, yeah, it does. But this, I think that's the warning I would always give about looking at risks. And this is what you're trying to do with your podcast here, Neil, which is to talk and think around more broadly so that if either you're someone who's got a long-term pension portfolio or something and you want to think about having some sort of hedge in there, or you might be a punter who wants to, you know, jump on these big moves and the volatility, looking for volatility in something.
Well, that's risky, I think.
But it is risky. But this is what markets are all about, the meeting of all these different kinds of people. So actually, this particular Coco episode is probably worthwhile of study for everyone.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's maybe, and maybe a size as maybe, you know, some of the climate change people who write about climate change would say, it's going to happen more and more because of climate change. So we can expect more. I mean, there's actually research from last year that was in the MPJ Climate and Atmospheric Science Journal assessing a worst-case scenario in which extreme weather hits two breadbasket regions in the same year. That, you know, it's talking about how they're much more likely to happen, you know, once in 100-year droughts or poor low-yield scenarios, famine. Are much more likely to happen, I think, more likely every 16 years or something like that in China, I think. Yeah, here we go. So heat waves that in 1981 were expected to affect the Midwest in only one in every 100 years, now likely every 6 years.
Wow.
So that's the kind of level of weather event that we're dealing with now.
So that's a fact because
it's already happened. That's already happening. We're dealing with it, a heat wave, 100-year heat waves are happening every six years.
Yeah.
And so that is affecting the production of wheat. I mean, obviously, there's other things going on here. I mean, science is making strides. It means that, you know, we don't necessarily need the same amount of wheat that we used to need.
Yeah, and also, you know, some of what's gone so wrong in this cocoa market is to do with the regulation.
The market functioning is not great in cocoa, I don't think.
It's in
terms of the, as we discussed there, with the way the processors and the dealers and the farmers all interact, it's maybe not as smooth as it could be.
Yeah, I mean, apparently Ghana haven't actually got enough beans to get the funding, the processors in the middle, funding from the state. So that, again, makes it more rational to produce nothing rather than keep trying to go on, which exacerbates the problem. Yeah. But I think, actually, you know, often commodity markets are very heavily regulated. It's worthwhile exploring those regulatory elements to see how the system can fall down. Because that's the thing about regulation, it's never foolproof. It can't cover every scenario.
No, and it needs to evolve with...
It does.
...the changing
And maybe, actually, you know, stuff like that data about, you know, the regularity of extreme heat needs to feed into the regulators because, they might have a... I remember, actually, this reminds me a little bit of that nickel surge that happened and it basically almost sent the London Metal Exchange bust. Mm. But I went back and looked at their stress testing. And this is the classic thing. Whenever exchanges try and set margin requirements, you know, they try and look at stress testing. And in this scenario, everyone would have to post 10 times more margin or 100 times. And, you know, do we have the buffer funds these exchanges keep to meet claims and pay out? Mm-hmm. And of course, inevitably, they never quite do because stress testings are never quite stressful enough. Uh-huh. And what we're hearing from the climate specialist is that people aren't even alive to that risk.
No.
You know, we don't even see enough of those statistics. Like those ones you've shared today are new to me. So.
No, it's a failure of imagination, seems to be. That was from this...
Is that their quote?
This wheat study in the US.
Yeah.
Yeah, failure of imagination, which I think is... does describe it because we can't quite imagine what no grain would look like.
Mm.
You know, what would that look like? So,
and then of course you talk about anarchy. It very clearly would lead to conflict.
Yeah,
you could then have a political response, quite likely to have a geopolitical response, which could exacerbate the supply chain because one country might pull up the borders and say, well, we're not exporting to you or you're not our friend, so you're not getting this, and then the supply chain starts to fall down. So actually, again, you know, Ukraine has been, it's almost a warning about what we could see happen and not brought about by an aggressor necessarily, just by the weather.
Yeah. So Ukraine has been talked about, energy security was the big thing, but actually maybe food security too.
Well, food security is probably more relevant to the anarchy even than energy, which of course is
definitely
important.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I think...
Go and buy some Easter eggs. Yeah, stock up on the cops. Stock up now.
Panic buy.
If there's one message, no, please, that's obviously a joke, but...
Panic buy cocoa beans. No, don't do that.
No, the message is...
Do eat fruit.
No, okay. Yeah, that would help everyone. Sorry, yeah. Don't be selfish. Think of, oh no, that helps me in the end, because then my chocolate bars should not be so expensive.
Exactly. Okay. And remember, Helen, don't forget what happened to the man who suddenly got everything he always wanted.
Is that what happened?
He lived happily ever after.
Oh, very good, Gene Wilder.
That's Roald Dahl. So on that note, thanks for listening. Oh, and happy Easter. Bye.
Bye.
Remember, all opinions, news, research, analysis, prices, or other information is provided as general market commentary, not as investment advice, and all potential results discussed are not guaranteed to be achieved. The information may have been derived from publicly available sources, company reports, personal research, or surveys. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Trading carries risk of capital loss, and the service is available to professional clients only.